Welcome to Publishing Dribble, the podcast that breaks the rules and helps you kickstart your career as a successful nonfiction author and entrepreneur. I'm your host, Malene Benson. If you're a female author or thinking about writing a book, this episode is for you. My guest today is Dr. Lois Frankel, PhD in counseling psychology. Lois is best-selling author, keynote speaker, executive coach, and an expert on how to achieve career success. She is the author of numerous best-selling books, including the New York Times bestseller and Business Bible for Women, Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, which a decade after it was published, maybe it was even more, let's hear that in a minute, still rank at the top of women in business on Amazon. In fact, it is in the top 0.05% of all of Amazon books. Today, she will share her journey as an author and how she used her book to build an impressive career as an expert entrepreneur and role model for women at all ages. Welcome, Lois.
Thank you so much for the invitation to join you.
I'm so happy that you're here. I've been looking forward to talking to you. Quite an impressive career, both as an author and otherwise.
Thank you. You know, I have been very fortunate.
I know that books have been and are a central part of your business. So when was Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office first published?
Yeah, that was first published exactly 20 years ago. This month is the 20th anniversary.
So it was two decades.
Two decades ago. And then 10 years ago, we did an update. We did a 10-year anniversary edition. And then we were going to do another anniversary edition, a 20-year anniversary edition. But I kind of ran out of steam for it. And the fact is that people are still buying it as it is and finding it very relevant.
Yeah, I'm guessing the content is still as equally relevant as before.
You know, unfortunately, it is. You know, when I wrote it 20 years ago, I had no idea that it would be evergreen as it has been. But I have young people. I just did a webinar this morning for International Women's Week. And these women, I would say they were in their 20s. And they were saying, you know, how impactful the book is in their career. Women in their 40s were saying, I wish I had this sooner. And so there's something evergreen about it. And it's also something that captures an international audience.
Why did you start writing in the first place?
Oh, you know, I first started writing, and it wasn't my first book. So let me be clear about that. I had two other books under my belt before then. One was a book for women. It's called Women, Anger, and Depression, Strategies for Self-Empowerment. And the second book was actually had some critical acclaim. It was called Stop Sabotaging Your Career. And it was for both men and women. And it was about how people unknowingly engage in behaviors that sabotage themselves. So Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office was the third one. Now, why I wrote those books, and I think why I write every book, is because I want to help people that I'll never meet. Right. So the first one about women, anger, and depression, I was actually at the time working as a psychotherapist, and I was seeing a pattern of behavior in women. And that pattern was they didn't express their anger. And as a result, they became depressed. And then the more I looked into it, I realized, yeah, they don't express their anger because in most societies, women's anger isn't acceptable. They get messages about it not being acceptable. So that's why I did that one. And so I wanted to help people that I'd never meet. And the same has been true for every subsequent book. The rest really were related more to my coaching experiences. And there were people that I was never going to coach, but I wanted to coach them to success through my books.
And if you look at it from a growing your own business perspective, what were you hoping to achieve?
Now, I have to be really honest with you. I didn't expect to get any secondary gain. I certainly didn't expect, you know, after the first two books made a modest amount of money, the first one I didn't get any advance. The second one I got a $25,000 advance, and the agent I had promptly stole that. But then by the third book, I had upped the ante on the advances. So I really wasn't expecting any secondary gain, but it turned out to be phenomenal. Because once Corner Office came out, it was a game changer for me. It brought attention to my work, and it enabled me to do some things I'd been wanting to do, but just hadn't been able to build the platform. I wanted to do more keynote speaking. I was just kind of at the stage of my business and my career where I was getting a little bit bored with just doing the coaching. I'd been doing it, oh gosh, at that point, I'd probably been doing it for 10 or 15 years. And I was ready for something different. And so anyway, the secondary gain from the book was to be able to do keynote speaking. And then as it became more and more popular, there was obviously quite a financial gain from that.
Yeah. So those first two books, now the listeners are aspiring authors. So why do you think that didn't happen with those two books?
Yeah, I think the first book on women, anger, and depression, it was put out by Health Communications, and I didn't feel like they really put any effort into helping me market it. And I think so much of it is in the marketing, right? And then in the second book, Stop Sabotaging Your Career, they did put more effort into marketing, and I did get some acclaim. As a matter of fact, Fast Company magazine named it the, I think this is a compliment, named it the best unsung business book of the year. And so, you know, it did get some acclaim, but it still, it didn't really take off. So why did the third book take off? They put quite a bit of money into marketing. And so they assigned me a publicist. I had that publicist work with me both 3 months before and 3 months after. And she happens to have been a phenomenal publicist. And I think that made a huge difference. I think there's that. I also think it was the right book at the right time. I think so much of it is that too. You know, even though I was talking about people's careers in Stop Sabotaging Your Career, I think people still didn't get this whole coaching notion. Coaching was still relatively new. And I think by the time Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office came out, you know, they changed the title. That wasn't my working title. My working title was Quit Being a Girl. And they changed it to Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office. And I said, you realize I'm going to spend my whole life explaining that you can be nice and you can be successful. So I wasn't a fan of the title. So I think they did a couple of things right to help me get it off the ground, from the publicity to changing the title and to it, you know, being the right book at the right time.
I think it's a great title.
Thank you. Obviously, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something provocative about it. It evokes curiosity. You immediately understand it's a business book because it's about the corner office. So you understand who it's for very easily. And everybody who is too much of a nice girl will be able to recognize themselves directly in the title.
Except the people who want to be seen as a nice girl and think that the book is going to be about being mean and nasty. Now, they still tell me that they didn't buy the book originally because of that. They're afraid to get beyond nice.
Yeah. Well, so, and they probably were some of those who needed the book. But anyways, you grabbed a big chunk of the market there with that title. So, yeah.
I also think, I think there was something else that made it so popular. It was written in a different way than most nonfiction books. It was very short chunks. You know, if you recall, you could pick up the book and read a chapter in a minute, literally a minute or two. And any place you open the book, there was something relevant. And so I think it appealed to the waning attention span of most readers.
Yeah, and that's a great point, actually, that I know you've talked about how you need to find that unique message and have something that is so important for you to say that you cannot not write the book.
Yes.
So there's some kind of novelty in that, looking for novelty, but that novelty can also be in the format of the book.
Yes, it can. And it should be, novelty should be a format that's unique to you and familiar to you. So for example, with Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, I remember the moment that the idea was born. I mean, I remember the minute. I was working with a client, a woman client, who had told me she was invited to sit on the executive committee of her company. And I went to give her a high five and she said, no, I'm not going to do it. And I looked at her and I said, this better be good. And she said, you know, I've been to those meetings. They're a waste of time. And what popped out of my mouth was, honey, you got to quit being a girl, because only a woman would be invited to sit on the executive committee and think it was a waste of her time, that she should be more productive. And at that moment, what came flooding into my head was all the mistakes I'd seen women make because of how they were socialized. So on the way back from that, she was on the East Coast of the United States. I live on the West Coast. On the plane ride back, I had most of it outlined. That's how strongly I felt about it. And then also putting it in the format that I would coach people, right? When you coach people, you don't give them a book, right? You don't talk like you're a book. You give them quick tips about, okay, here's how I see, here's what's happening, here's what you need to do. And so I just put that in the same format that I coached. And it really worked for me because people said, you know, I feel like you're just talking to me. And that's exactly what I was doing.
And for those who don't know your book, what format is that then?
So the book is in the format where there are six, I call them buckets. As a matter of fact, I'm working on a new TV show and I'm calling them buckets full of mistakes that women make. And so there's six buckets, like how you look, how you sound, how you respond, how you brand and market yourself. And then each one of those is a chapter. And then within each one of those chapters, there's a mistake, right? And then attached to each of those mistakes are coaching tips. So, for example, in the area of building and using relationships, the mistake is women build relationships, but they don't maximize them. And then I explain how for women, we see it as a little bit smarmy that I build a relationship and then I'm going to ask somebody for a favor. I don't want them to think that I just built the relationship because I want a favor from them. And I give examples. And that only takes two or three pages because you get the mistake. I mean, as soon as I say it, you know, you build relationships, but you won't take advantage of them. And then following that, there are coaching tips. So there are anywhere from three to five coaching tips. So if you want to build strong relationships, here's how you do it. So each section within the chapter is, you know, anywhere from 5 to 7 pages.
Yeah. So I imagine that must have helped you tremendously in writing the book. So how long did it take to actually write it?
Yeah, it did help me tremendously because, first of all, I was basing it all on my own experiences, right? I didn't have to do a lot of research. I had to do some research, but I could do the research while I was at it. And, you know, thank God for the internet.
Yeah.
Right? It's like I'm trying to think when I was writing my dissertation for my PhD, there was no internet. You had to go to the library, you had to do all these things. Thank God for the internet. You know, you're not sure about something, Google it. Right? And find out about it. Who said this quote, or give me a quote about women who do XYZ, and you can just get what you want right in the moment. So it really did help me because it enabled me to write in the same format that I thought. It took me, like I said, I had most of it outlined on the plane, and then I think it took me 6 months.
Yeah, start to finish.
Start to finish. But that's about how long it takes me to write a book, but that's because I love to write. So I don't procrastinate. I don't put it off. I can sit and write for an entire day, uninterrupted for hours. And that's what I mean when I say you need to have something you need to say so badly that nothing's going to stop you from saying it.
Yeah, and a great structure so that you don't get lost in your manuscript.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost in your thoughts, isn't it?
If
And it's
that
easy to,
happens for all of us, yes.
yeah, and you get fall in love with the sound of your voice, right? And then you have to have every word just perfect. And that's just not me. You know, on the Myers-Briggs, I'm a J. It's like, give me an idea, I'm an NJ. Give me an idea and let me bring it to fruition. And I am a dog with a bone until it happens. And I think a lot of authors, though, they're probably more like, you know, on the Myers-Briggs, the P, the perceiver, which is, no, I'm not ready to have anybody see this because it's not perfect yet. Or, no, if I change it a little, it'll be better. And all of that is true. That's just not me.
No. Do you think that influence the best way for an author to approach writing a book, what personality they have?
I hadn't thought about it before, but it's a good point that you're making. I think that you do have to take that into effect. That does have to come in, you know, that does have to be taken into consideration. So, you know, for example, well, you know, again, on the Myers-Briggs, I'm an INFJ. So I'm an introvert, right? I get my energy by working independently, by thinking things through. that lends itself to writing a book. I can tell you there are so many extroverts who have come to me for coaching about writing a book. They can't sit in one place long enough to write the book. In which case I say you need to maybe have a ghostwriter for you, because you have the ideas, but you don't have the tenacity or the personality style to want to sit for hours alone in a room writing. And you know, that's what it takes to write a book if you're serious about it. Now, can you do it in a longer period of time? I guess the extroverts just take longer. That's all. If all I can tolerate is sitting in a room for an hour or two and writing one or two pages, it's just going to take longer. That's all. So I think, yes, I think that's a very good point that you bring up, that people should be aware of their personality styles. What are the strengths of those styles? And then how are you going to counter them? So like, for example, for me, because I like to push things through, I had to be careful not to assume everybody knew what was in my head. You know, I needed to give more explanations, be more thorough, and also pay somebody. And this was something I did that's interesting. I paid somebody to proof it. I paid a professional proofer before I ever submitted it, because I knew, as a coach, I knew, people are going to want to do their jobs well. And if you're an editor at a publishing house, you're going to find mistakes, right?
Yeah.
And if I don't, and then you're going to want to monkey with my words. But if I don't give you the opportunity to find those mistakes, yeah, if what I submit is so well done that you say, oh, I don't have a lot to add to it, then I'm not going to have to go back and make a lot of changes. So I had some strategies in there too.
Yeah, get quicker in the market as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look back at those, you mentioned now three books, but there are more books, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can you try and line out the journey for us and how that has influenced your business as well?
Yeah. Okay. So those were the first three. Nice Girl, Women, Anger, and Depression. Stop Sabotaging Your Career, I'll explain that in a second. Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office. Then they came back to me after Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office was on the bestseller list and said, now we want you to write a book called Nice Girls Don't Get Rich. And I said, well, I'm not a financial planner. I can't write a book about that. And they said, we don't want a financial planner. You understand women. You understand their behaviors. We want it to be from a behavioral standpoint. And I said, well, let me give that some thought. And so I did. And then I said, okay, now I got it. Okay. Because what I needed to do in my head was I had to get it in that same format. What are the mistakes women make with money? And how do you avoid those? So that one, the subtitle of that one became 75 Avoidable Mistakes Women Make with Money, right? Yeah. But I did the exact same thing. It was mistake followed by tips. And then there were buckets that each of the mistakes fell into, whether it was not saving enough, spending inappropriately, things like not investing, things like that. But when my agent went to negotiate for that book, I said, I'm willing to do that book, but I want Stop Sabotaging Your Career to come back out, because I thought that was a really good book that was, undersold. So he sold that as a package. And he said, okay, we're going to do Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, and you're going to put out Stop Sabotaging Your Career under a different title. Now, for people who don't know, if you take the same book and you put it out under a different title, you need 30% new material. And you also have to, indicate that it was formally published under. So I needed to update that, but that was okay, because at that point it needed to be updated anyway. And so we sold those as a package. So now there you have five books, right? And then after that, Nice Girls Don't Get Rich. After that, they wanted another Nice Girls book, and we couldn't agree on what the Nice Girls book was going to be. I said, I'd like to write Nice Girls Don't Lead. Leadership is a Woman's Art. And they liked that idea, but they didn't like the title. So they said, okay, we want you to write a book about women in leadership, but let's not make it part of the Nice Girl series. Okay, fine. So then I wrote, they decided to call it CJ Lead. They didn't want Nice Girls Don't Lead. They didn't want part of the series. So now we have CJ Lead, right?
Yes.
But they still want another Nice Girls book in the series. And so I proposed a lot of ideas, none of which they liked, until finally a colleague of mine and I, her name is Carol Frohlinger, she wanted to write a book together. And my publisher didn't want me to write a book with anyone else. She said, Lois, it dilutes your brand. Well, me being who I am, I'm collegial. right? And my friend wanted to write a book together, and I knew she was smart, and she had already written a book. She had co-authored Her Place at the Table, a book about negotiation. And so we came up with a book, long and short of it. We didn't know what to name it until finally my agent said, I think you should call it Nice Girls Just Don't Get It. Because you have Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, Nice Girls Don't Get Rich, now Nice Girls Just Don't Get It, right? And so we had to go to a different publisher at that point, because my publisher had already said, I don't want that book, and I don't want you writing a book with someone else. Oh, I hope this is all helpful to your listeners.
It definitely is, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the stuff that you go through in this process. So we did sell it to a different publisher, and I knew I had made a mistake right away. The publisher, they wanted to get me into the publishing house, but they really didn't want this book. And so they didn't put a lot of money into it. They put a new editor on it. And so that editor, when we would get her edits, it would come back with mistakes that we had to correct again. It was just a bad experience. And I knew I didn't want to work with this publishing house again. And I didn't want to work with that editor again. So that didn't do that well, because again, they didn't put any money into it. I'm the one who got us on the Today Show, because I picked up the phone. I called the Today Show. I said, you know, you've had me on three other times. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to have me again for this new book. And they said, yeah, you know, come on down. So we did a thing on the Today Show. But again, most of the publicity was because I pushed it. And so that one didn't do as well as I'd like. And then I came up with the idea for Nice Girls Don't Speak Up or Stand Out. Now, that one came from the fact that whenever I did keynote presentations, people would come up to me at the end, and the part they liked best about my presentation was always about communication. And they'd say, I wish I had you on my shoulder, whispering in my ear when I had to negotiate, when I had to have a difficult conversation, when I had to do all these things. So I thought, well, I should write a book about communication. So I started writing the book, Nice Girls Don't Speak Up or Stand Out. And I went back to my original publisher, and they were happy to have me. And have
same
the nice
format
book.
As well? In the same
no,
format?
I started to do the same format. I'm glad you asked. And then I realized this book should not be in print. This should be an audio book. Because if you're talking about communication, you have to hear me saying it. You know, it's one thing to say, okay, you know, here's how you communicate with impact. You use headlines, give follow-up information, you use a tagline. It's a different thing for you to hear me say, okay, here's how a headline sounds. I want to tell you what my idea is that will solve this particular problem, right? And then people have to hear it. So I went back and I said, I don't want this in print. I want this to be an audiobook. And they agreed, fortunately. They agreed. But I did use the same format for the audiobook, which was, it's a mistake. And then it's, how do you overcome this mistake? Right.
So more or less the same structure.
More or less the same structure, but somewhat different because, again, it was being audio taped.
Yeah.
So about halfway through that book, I realized my editor had left and she'd gone to another publishing house. And I was given a new editor. And I got the feeling that editor wasn't really behind this book because I just wasn't getting the support I wanted. My emails weren't being returned, you know, and I even complained to, you know, senior management at the publisher, and they brought me to New York and said, let's have a discussion and blah, blah, blah. But I could tell people, and you have to remember at this point also, publishing had changed. It was harder to sell a book. And I think
when was this? How long ago?
This was maybe 4 years ago. It might have been just when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
And so they had their own problems, right? And I was the least of them. And so, again, I didn't have a push of publicity. And even though I think it's one of my best books and people who listen to it love it, it didn't get a big splash. And so that was really discouraging to me, because I really thought it would be on a par with Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office. But again, by now, publishing had changed. It became harder to sell a book, even for a best-selling author. It was harder to get publicity. I couldn't get on the Today Show with this one. You know, it's like the talk shows that used to have me on and have book sections, they didn't have book sections anymore. You know, they had sections about what's Prince Harry doing, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was like all splashy stuff. So, you know, society had changed, readership had changed, and so I was discouraged. And so what I decided I was going to do was just write a book that I always wanted to write. And I got in my car and I put my dog in the car with me and I drove across the United States, stopping in cities that I'd never been to and talked to women who were there in their 70s and older. And I said, I'm writing a book about the wisdom of older women. And I would like you to tell me, what's the one thing you know to be true in your life after living all these years? A lot of women couldn't get what I was asking for. So I had to kind of change it to, if you had to give one piece of advice to a young woman today, what would it be? And I put those together then in a book, and I combined it with my photography because I love photography and I wanted to use my photography. And I took these women's pictures. And then when I started traveling around the world, I did it everywhere, right? I asked people around the world, you know, what one piece of advice would you give me? And then that turned into the book, Ageless Women, Timeless Wisdom. Couldn't get anybody to buy it. You know, here I am, bestselling author, could not get anybody to buy this book. And people said, oh, you know, it's a cocktail table book. Cocktail table books are out, unless it's about homes or decorating or... And again, I was really discouraged because I loved this book. And so I thought, well, I'm going to self-publish this book, which is what I did. And yeah, sold some copies. I can't say it was overly successful. But a friend of mine knew a publisher called Skyhorse Publishing. And she said, Lois, they publish books like yours. So then they bought the rights to it because it was very expensive to self-publish this book. It was about $13 per book. Because it had all the pictures in it, and it was in color, right? That's going to be expensive. And so they took it over. And then that way I didn't have that expense. And they put the book out. And again, you know, sold some copies. It was never another corner office, let me put it that way, or Nice Girls Don't Get Rich.
But it's still selling, the other one also.
Yeah, they're all still selling. You know, that's the thing. I have to say, you know, I don't know, you're pretty young. I don't know if you remember Ricky Nelson. Ricky Nelson.
I'm not pretty young, but it's probably because I'm Danish.
Well, Ricky Nelson was an American singer. He was popular in the 1950s. He was on a television show with his parents called Ozzy and Harriet. Then in the 60s and 70s, he became a singer. He wrote a song called Garden Party. And I always feel a little bit like Ricky Nelson because the song Garden Party was about the fact that whenever he tried to play new music, people didn't want to hear it. They only wanted to hear the old songs, right?
Yeah.
So he was kind of, he always played like, I don't know what kind of music, you know, 60s, 70s music. But then when he tried to get into the 80s, people didn't want to hear his music. And so I felt a little like Ricky Nelson. You know me for Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, but you don't want to hear the new stuff. And finally, I had a woman working with me, a brand manager working with me, and she said, Lois, you should be happy for what you have. Work with this brand. Make this your brand. You don't have to expand out. Well, you know, I kind of felt like I did have to expand out, but it wasn't going to happen. And so I stuck with the brand.
Yeah. Well, there might be some strategy. I like the strategy that it's not an actual series, and yet it kind of is. And I'm sitting here with some thoughts that there might be strategies taking advantage, like capturing emails from one book, selling the other books afterwards. But there's also just the fact that not everything we do is equally successful. And I thank you so much for sharing that it's not all been, here you are, New York Times bestselling author, and it's still been a bumpy road.
Yes.
And some things will succeed and some will not. And the most important thing is that you share that experience with the wider audience. And mm-hmm. and then those who pay attention, they will definitely discover your material, right?
Yeah. You know, and I think that it is important for authors to know that it isn't all smooth sailing. Also, you know, I remember talking to this brand person. You've probably heard of Susie Orman, right? Susie Orman has written finance books.
Yeah.
Right. She's known as a finance. And I said, you know, Susie Orman is like a household name. Why am I not a household name? And she said, you don't want to be a household name. And I said, why is that? She said, because you value work-life balance. Mm. And to be a household name, there's no balance. You have to be out there all the time. People are going to recognize you when you walk down the street. They're going to, you know, and she said, do you, if you really want that, I'll make it happen. And I realized, no, that's not what I want in my life. And I think authors need to understand that too. Yeah. What is it that you really want? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
You know, I was never doing it to make money, ever. I was always doing it to help people because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to help people be successful, people I'd never meet. So this kind of brings us to today where, you know, I don't think I have another book in me. I wish I did. And if I do, it's like a totally different topic. And I keep saying to myself, Lois, nobody wants those topics from you. So just let it go. Oh, as a matter of fact, I started to write a book about how to raise self-confident daughters, right? And I had it all outlined. I thought, oh, this would be perfect, right? And I did a survey and I got input, did a whole proposal. They said, Lois, that's not your brand. Children aren't your brand. Nobody's going to buy that book. And again, it was like so disappointing. So finally, fast forward, I came up with an idea for a television show. And the television show was going to be about, you know, helping people to succeed in the workplace. And they didn't want that TV show. They wanted a Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office TV show. And again, it brought it back to, okay, so here's your brand. So anyway, after working on this other TV show quite a bit, now, as a matter of fact, my next call after you is with my literary agent. We are working on a Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office reality show.
Oh, so, that's interesting. We will have to have you back then.
Yeah, when we do that. Oh, and one last thing is that another secondary gain was I did sell the title numerous times to entertainment to make a scripted show. Okay, now, and that's always a long shot, but they did make a pilot called Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office. It starred Jemma Mays, Gregory Itzen, Catherine Hayes, and others, Jane Curtin. So they did make a pilot, which you can see on YouTube. And if you just Google Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office YouTube pilot, you can see the show. And that was secondary gain. And that was fun. That was outside my comfort zone. And I had never thought of anything theatrical. Never. When they called me, someone called me within hours after my Today Show appearance, my first Today Show appearance, said, I want to buy your title. And they were talking to my assistant. I said, this has to be a joke. You know, like, I don't have time to deal with this right now. Just put her off until, you know, I can get back in town. But it wasn't, you know, she bought the title and it sold several times. So that's another thing to think about with titles.
Yes. Yes, definitely. I think it's a great title. Obviously, also has proven to be. So before we end, I would love to just get a little bit into female authors. And from what you know about women, this huge amount of knowledge you have about how we behave, how we think, what we don't do, we should do. What are some of the things that you would recommend female authors consider when embarking on an author journey?
Okay. The first thing that I would have them consider is what is their niche? My experience with women is they want to be all things to all people. And that's not how you sell books. It's about narrowing it down, narrowing it down, narrowing it down further than you want to narrow it down. And it becomes counterintuitive that to sell a book, it has to have such a narrow niche. Well, I shouldn't say that. Because you can't have too narrow a niche that nobody will buy it. And I'm trying to think of something offhand, which I can't, like, you know, how to put a fork on a table at dinner. I mean, that would be like too narrow. But if you're like Martha Stewart and it's like, how do you entertain making hors d'oeuvres? That's narrow enough, right? Martha Stewart didn't just come out with this huge book. She had narrowed it down to entertaining in a certain way. And so you need to narrow it down. And I think for women, that's hard. That's number one. Number two, tapping into relationships. You know, our journeys are made so much easier when we tap into the relationships we have. And let me give you an example. There was a woman author I met at a cocktail party. Her father was a famous psychologist, okay? And she came up to me and she said, you know, I've written this book and I can't get anybody to take a look at it. And she didn't have the same last name as her father. And I said, have you told people who your father is? She said, oh, I would never capitalize on his good name. Yeah. This was another quit being a girl moment, right? I said, yeah, quit being a girl. It doesn't mean they're going to buy your book. but you need to use his name to get in the door. You need to ask his publishers, can you help me, right? Can you direct me to someone? In sending a cover letter, you know, you need to somehow weave it in there very carefully about, you know, as the daughter of so-and-so, I know something about this, and that's why I wrote a book about it. So that's why she wasn't selling her book, is because she could have had a great book, but she still needed to have the relationships in place, and or she needed to capitalize on the relationships. And then after she did that, she was able to sell the book. So I think that's a second thing for women. And let me think about a third thing, because I wasn't expecting this question. What would a third thing that women do that gets in their way of, right? Oh, should be so obvious. You need to make time for you, right? You know, there's the old story about Irma Bombeck, right, who wrote all of these books for women. Or they were books about, they were funny books. She wrote humorous books, Irma Bombeck. And she wrote them between 4 and 6 a.m. every day because she had a family. And at 6 o'clock, she had to get the kids up, get them ready to school, get her husband off to work. I mean, this was during a very traditional time. But she had something she so badly wanted to say that she couldn't not say it. And she had to say it between 4 and 6 a.m. Now, I'm not saying you have to do it between 4 and 6 a.m., but I can tell you, I wrote Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office every night after work, okay? It wasn't as if at that time I had the latitude to write during the day, because I didn't. I was busy making a living. So I would come home from a business trip or from my office, and I would write every night between 6 and sometimes midnight to get this book done. So, you know, we don't have the same luxury sometimes that men have to just sit and write during the day. But you do have to make time for yourself and give yourself permission to do it and ask people to work with you as you do it. Say, you know, I'm going to be writing this book and I need you to watch the kids twice a week between this time and this time. Enlist your friends, enlist your husband, wife, spouse, or partner, enlist your parents. Enlist people. Now, writing a book for most women, it takes a village.
Yeah, people do compare writing a book with giving birth.
I often do. I say, you know, when I see that baby, you know, wow, this is what I gave birth to. Yeah.
So just one last question. In terms of working with publishers, do you have a piece of advice for that?
Yeah, it would be get an agent. You know, that publishers are more likely to look at your stuff when it comes from an agent. How do you find an agent? There is a book. I think it's called The Literary Book of Agents or The Book of Literary Agents. It comes out every year, or it used to come out every year. I haven't looked at it lately, but it used to come out every year. And I'm sure now it comes out online. It may be an ebook. I don't know. You know what I'm referring to?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you get that book, and what I did several times was you scour that book for somebody who's selling your kind of book, okay? Nonfiction. Is it for women? Is it about cooking? Is it about exercise? You know, whatever it is. Find out who's selling those books. The other way you can do that is you can go into a bookstore, which is even harder to do these days. Go to the section that your book would be. Open up books that are similar to yours and see who they thank, okay? Because the person that they're thanking is the person that helped them get that book on that shelf. And you almost always thank your literary agent, okay?
Yeah, that's a really good tip. I haven't thought about that, actually.
Yes. And so, you know, once I had the right literary agent, things really moved forward for me. Because I think also as a woman, I wouldn't have negotiated for myself as well as he negotiated for me.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to have a literary agent and find the one that's right for you, who's really good. I know I found that just the right guy for me, and he was so helpful. Unfortunately, he passed away too soon. And so I've kind of been without one until just recently, because it's hard to find a good one. But yeah, it's not impossible. It's not impossible. And it's a numbers game. I sent Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office to 10 literary agents. 9 of them rejected it. And yeah, one yeah, said, I like this. I'll take it.
Yeah. So just keep at it. Never give in, never give up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Lois, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your time and all of this wisdom and experience with our listeners. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure, and I wish everyone write the book that's in their hearts.
Thank you.